Moving to the Middle East now, more than 100 aid organisations have warned today of mass starvation spreading across Gaza due to Israel's blockade. The Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, described what's happening in the Palestinian enclave as beyond any comprehension, adding that the stark images of starving children are horrific. A short time ago, I spoke with the BBC's international editor, Jeremy Bowen, and I began by asking him what we know about starvation inside Gaza, given Israel is preventing journalists and aid workers from entering.
It does make it difficult for journalists that we can't get in. We do have very reliable Palestinian colleagues who are able to get information themselves, get anecdotal stuff, get video. But as well as that, rather more tangibly and in terms of hard data, there have been studies by the relevant international organizations that study food emergencies around the world who have been regularly reporting, I think every 3 months. And they've said very clearly which direction this is going in, and the direction of starvation and famine. And unfortunately, it seems to be borne out now by events. And as well as that, of course, there was a big statement by European and other foreign ministers a couple of days ago. And there was also today a large number of very respected aid organizations, various non-governmental organizations, came out with a statement warning about hunger. And these are reputable bodies with, you know, decades of experience in this sort of thing. So up on one side, you've got the Israelis saying, look, nothing to see here. If there is any hunger, it's all to do with Hamas. There's plenty of food and we let it in. And we have on the other side of the scale, if you like, you know, very clear testimony and evidence coming in to say that actually reality is the opposite.
The fear must be that if famine does take hold in Gaza, there will be an exponential growth or a rapid growth in the death rate.
Yeah, I think that's a big fear. And a lot of people getting killed anyway by Israeli action because of military action. But I mean, journalists use this for, certainly at the BBC. You know, we tend to use this formulation about the Hamas-run health ministry, and in the past, their figures were normally considered to be pretty accurate. But there are some bodies and some studies. There was one in the Lancet Medical Journal in the UK saying that actually their numbers are underestimates. So as well as people dying of hunger, you've got people who are killed by military action, and you've got people who die because they haven't been able to get medical care for things like cancer. So there is, there is a massive amount of civilian death, needless civilian death, happening in Gaza as a result of Israel's determination to carry on the war.
You mentioned foreign ministers from 26 countries, including Ireland, saying yesterday that it's horrifying that more than 800 Palestinians have been killed while seeking aid, trying to actually get food. Do we know what aid is being distributed, if at all?
Well, they were referring to the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, which is this somewhat shadowy group, which was set up by a combination of Israelis and the Americans. And there's American money in there, there's Israeli money in there, apparently there's some private money in there from rich individuals as well. They claim to have distributed something like 50 million meals. The thing is, though, it's absolutely chaotic. They basically put the boxes out and people fight for them. And because of the proximity, it's in an area controlled by the Israeli military. And regularly, the military and perhaps as well the armed American security who also work at those sites have been opening fire. And you know, the foreign ministers talked about, I think, more than 800 killed. The UN came out with a figure of over 1,000 yesterday.
Jan Egeland of the Norwegian Refugee Council, a big donor in Gaza, said his organisation has not been able to get a single truck into Gaza for 146 days. And he described the diplomatic impotence of Western nations, his words, as astounding. Now that we have the spectre of starvation and famine, do you believe that could change the diplomatic dial?
Well, the language used by European foreign ministers has been hardening over this year, I'd say. These were countries that mostly rallied around Israel big time after the 7th of October attacks, which, of course, is getting on for 2 years ago now. But the way that the war has continued, Israel's prosecution of the war, with it I think the evidence is with often with little regard for the laws of war, has changed their tune in a big time. But will that be followed up by the kind of action that might change minds? Well, there's one argument, which is actually the Israelis only listen to the Americans, and the Europeans could do what they want, and they're not going to listen. But the argument is that, in fact, these countries, which include some of the wealthiest and most powerful countries on the planet, could do a great deal more. Things they could do in the those countries, and the UK is one of them, could recognize a Palestinian state, perhaps a symbolic move, but certainly a strong gesture, and more tangible legal moves as well. The International Court of Justice came out with an advisory opinion, I think it was last year, saying that the entire occupation of Gaza, the West Bank, East Jerusalem is illegal. And stemming from that, if states then adopted that, the argument goes, they would be able to take legal action, for example, in terms of products produced in the occupied territories, they would be able to ban. They would be able to have, perhaps to inflict sanctions. And the idea is sporting sanctions even. And so, you know, the idea is that there are lots of ways in which they could put pressure on Israel. But because Israel is a Western ally, they don't get that kind of pressure. I was on a BBC panel last night, and they had one of the a former advisor to the British Foreign Secretary on, and she was saying, look, the way this needs to be adapted, needs to be approached, is you don't look at these actions taken by a country you've always regarded as a friend. You actually just imagine these actions have been taken by another country, and the unspoken word perhaps was Russia. How then would you respond? In other words, don't give Israel special treatment. That was the argument she was making.
There has been talk about recognition of the Palestinian state, a possible announcement being made by the UK and by France. Ireland, Spain and Norway have already walked down that road. Do you think, in the UK's context, that that will happen?
Well, I think there's pressure for it to happen, and I think there's an openness to the idea inside the British Foreign Office, perhaps less openness to the idea inside the Prime Minister's office at number 10. Will it happen? I think if they can find a way of doing it with the French, they might do it. However, the argument being put against it is, look, it's an empty gesture. What the heck difference would it make? I suppose the argument against that in turn is, if it's such an empty gesture, why are the Americans and the Israelis so opposed to it?
You've been writing about the imminent rising of Israel's parliament, the Knesset, for the summer, and that the possibility opens up that the Prime Minister would have more room to manoeuvre to possibly ease the blockade. Can you tell me about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, his fear has been that he will face people pulling out of his government, and then he won't be able to get important votes through the parliament, because he's reliant on the votes of very hardline ultra-nationalist parties. There are two government ministers, particularly Messrs. Smotrich and Ben-Gavir, who have been very open about what they want. They say no ceasefires and find a way to remove Palestinians from Gaza and replace them with Jewish settlers. Make it part of Israel. And they also want to do that with the West Bank, by the way. So they're, you know, really, really hardline. But once the parliament finishes its summer term, which is, I think, the end of the month, then they won't be able to do any votes like that until October. They get a very long summer break. And then even if there was a vote of no confidence in Netanyahu and he lost it and would have to call an election, that would still take him, because it takes about 3 months for the Israelis to get the whole election process going. That would then take him into next year, and elections are due late next year anyway. So I think there's a sense in which Netanyahu is in pre-election mode already. But certainly this long period over the summer does give him some latitude, and he's under quite a bit of pressure from the Americans to come to some kind of a deal and get more aid going into Gaza, because Trump is known to feel very uncomfortable when he sees pictures of starving kids. And as those get worse, he will, I think, get more angry about it. It seems to be the case.
Just one final question. Israel has always argued, all the way back since October the 7th, that Hamas is to blame for the conflict and it has the freedom to end it today by freeing the hostages it still holds. And it continues to say that argument every day that this conflict lasts.
Yeah. Well, there was actually, you will remember that at the end of the Biden administration, there was a ceasefire called. And it was in a number of phases. In the first phase, some Israeli hostages were released, quite a lot of them, and so were some Palestinian prisoners. And a lot of aid was allowed into Gaza. Trump put his weight behind that, which is really what, and even before he was in office. Now, there was a second phase of that agreement, and Netanyahu was known to be very against it, not least because his own hard right wing were against it. And the second phase of that agreement was supposed to culminate with a full and complete Israeli pullout from Gaza, and in return, the release of all the living hostages and the bodies of those who have died or been killed in captivity. But Israel chose not to try and negotiate seriously for that second phase, I think because it would require them to leave Gaza. And they went back to war. They broke the ceasefire. So it's not quite true to say that if Hamas just gave up the hostages, the war would end. Israel would still want to be in Gaza, and Hamas does not want them there, and neither do, I'd say, most Palestinians. So that's really where they're at the moment.
And that was Jeremy Bowen, BBC's international editor.